It's Thursday. It's the Gab and Jules show. I'm Gab. He's Jules. I'd say we'd have a packed show for you today. You know, we have an eventful show because, Jules, it's international break.
It is.
And, you know, on Mondays, on Thursdays, the rate the football comes this year, the fixture congestion,
yep.
It's so intense. It's so over the top. We don't have a chance to have a breather. Guess what? We have a breather. I'm going to give this away now. Secret of television. We taped a show on Thursday morning. Last night, you had a whole bunch of internationals. There are some, a whole bunch of friendly internationals,
friendlies, yeah.
Right? There are some relevant games tonight, right? The playoffs and more Nations League. But we're going to take a step back. We're going to slow it down a little bit. Mm. And we're going to talk about what this season looks like. Because this season is unlike any other. Unlike last season, even,
yeah.
This is just different. We don't know where we're going. The fixture congestion, Jules. We're playing weekends, Champions League, weekends, your international break, cramming three games in there. This has got to have an effect.
And we see it already with all the injuries, maybe the players not hitting form or at least struggling with some fitness, struggling with their performances. Maybe there's a reason why in all the leagues we've seen so many crazy results with smaller clubs. So say smaller clubs beating bigger clubs, because obviously smaller clubs have their players available through the international break. Not many of them would go and play with the national team. So you've got 2 weeks to prepare, 2 weeks to work on your fitness, on your tactics, on everything you want, on your recovery, when in the big clubs, they've got 80% of their players going away with the national teams.
Right.
So for them, it's harder. And for those players who play, as you said, every 3 days, then they go with the national team and have six days with three games.
Yeah, and then, of course, we have no fans, which is something else. I mean, we have some fans in some grounds, but, you know, the tiny amounts. Everything is different. The flavor of the football is different.
Yeah.
You know, we've conditioned ourselves since March to think that, well, this is just a big TV show and it's not going to matter. But it does matter. It is affecting the product that's out there. Now, there's nothing we can do about it. I'm glad they're playing. I'm assuming you are too, yeah?
Yes, definitely.
And we haven't even gotten to the effects of COVID and,
yeah.
And players testing positive. You know, we haven't, I'm trying to think who the highest, we've had Cristiano Ronaldo missing games from after a positive test. We've had Kai Havertz. You know, we have had some high profile players. We've had Pogba,
yeah.
Right? But, well, United fans might not consider him in the same
no,
vein.
No, but Kylian Mbappe, Neymar,
yeah.
COVID as well.
Now, it hasn't happened in situations where maybe there was a lot at stake, it was the start of the season, whatever. But this is going to wreak havoc with the campaign. You know, the way the rules are now, with the rules on self-isolation, we've already seen issues. We're seeing it this evening, for example.
Yeah.
Serbia play Scotland for a place in Euro 2020. It's a relevant game. It's an important game. Argentina play Paraguay Friday night. So, for example, in Italy, when you get more than a certain number of cases in a single club, the local health authority, and local health authorities have a lot of power in certain countries, in Spain, in Germany, mm-hmm. in Italy, in France, I'm assuming everything is centralized
because yes.
That's how you
but
guys like to rule.
But,
local health authority said, okay, everybody goes in quarantine because you have what's technically considered an outbreak, right? But they didn't. They just left.
Yeah.
Correa Milinkovic-Savic
yeah.
just left.
Yeah.
Now, what this means is, you know, they're not positive, though they'll be tested before their game. Presumably, they're not positive. But what this now means is that when they come back, they're going to have to self-isolate for 2 weeks. They could face fines. But from the club's perspective, you know, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Mm.
Local health authority says, no, you all have to quarantine. You can't go anywhere for 2 weeks. FIFA says, well, you have to release these players because, you know, they haven't tested positive, right? Why are they under quarantine order? It's a tricky
it's
situation.
A big mess,
it's
yeah.
a messy,
it's
messy
a really mess.
Situation.
Do you think this season could have been built up differently? So obviously, all the big organization wanted all their competitions to be played. We saw in England, for example, if you look about the FA Cup, the League Cup, and then the League, they would have ideally liked all those three competitions to be played. The UEFA wants the Champions League to be played and the Europa League to be played and finished. FIFA wants
and the Nations League, yeah.
And the Nations League. And, you know, the qualification for the Euro 2020. Everybody wants that, but should someone had let go a little bit and say, okay, for just for this season, because it's so crazy, because it's so different, we're not going to do this, or we're going to postpone this?
I think without question, and we're going to get to that in the next segment, but there's one point I want to make right now and be very, very clear on. All those people who are like, oh, scrap the Nations League, why are we playing international football, whatever. International football, to a lot of leagues outside the Big Five, maybe Big Ten in Europe, maybe one or two others, international football is the lifeblood of the game. International football is what keeps these football associations alive. It's what keeps them afloat financially. And that's why, you know, it's very easy to have a very sort of first world attitude towards it. Well, look, you know, we live in London, we cover the Premier League, what do we care about this crap? But this is so important to them.
Yeah, I agree.
And it keeps their whole game afloat, right down to the grassroots, right down to women's football, youth football. So, you know.
Although federations are usually quite wealthy, right?
They were, but now we've had the FA lost $300 million here in England and laid off 124 people. So they were. I think past tense is the operative term here. So basically, Jules, part of the problem is essentially the economics of football, right? There's a certain number of games that you have to play. You remember in South America, they're doing World Cup qualifying already, right?
Yeah.
They have paid, you know, they've been paid, the FAs have been paid for those games. And they've got commitments to sponsors for those games.
Yes, definitely. And broadcasters as well.
And broadcasters, yeah.
To show those games.
If you just decide, no, we're not going to play them, then there's a shortfall.
Yeah, there is. But I think the outcry came more from, in Europe, for example, those federation who have added a game, like you said, replaced the time or changed the time, but you know, you've got a friendly now that we saw a lot on Wednesday night, and then you will have two games in the Nations League down the line, either Friday and Saturday or Tuesday, Wednesday the following week. That extra game sounds a bit crazy, and I know they had to put it somewhere.
So
you can understand why fans are like, hang on, do they really have to play this game?
I know fans are like that, right? And it's generally always fans of England, France, Italy, Germany, right? People have got their, right? They're the ones who whinge the most about this. But look, this is the reality, okay? These players would be in training camp, right?
Yeah.
If they weren't playing this game on Wednesday, these games they played on Wednesday night. Most national team managers, what they've done is they haven't played their first teamers because these are friendlies. They're saving them for the Nations League games.
And the bigger squads as well, usually. They take 26, 27
They've taken
players.
More, yeah. I mean, Mancini, I think, took 35. I mean, you look at the, we'll get to this, but the Germany lineup, it's freaking, you know, Waldschmidt and Bobo or whatever the guy's name is who played on the right. You know, like, I don't have a problem with it. You know, you're taking guys who aren't going to play in the other two games and you're expanding the pool. I mean, the key, if you talk to national team managers, and we all have, I mean, Greg Berhalter is in the U.S. national team, you know, they're playing Wales. He's not going to learn anything from playing Wales. What he learns about is having a camp with the players, right?
Especially the younger ones.
And that's all they call out for. They want to see these players up close. You know, I think but by screaming about these pointless friendlies, like, they're not pointless to them. They have a Euro to build up for, you know? And this attitude, and if it's like this in Europe, you know, imagine a coach of basically anybody who's not in Europe, who doesn't get to see his players ever except for on TV, right? It just bugs me because this is navel-gazing, first world, me attitude.
But if you're the Italian manager, okay, you could have two full days of training, putting things in place together, having your strikers working together, your back four working together. Instead, you have to travel. Well, in that case, they were home to Estonia. But do you see what I mean? Otherwise, you have to travel. You lose one day. You have very light training. And the next day you travel.
Jules,
do you see what I mean?
It's not the, I'm sorry, but this whole thing, you have to travel thing. It's not the 1930s. They're not traveling
covered
wagons.
Still,
okay.
Would you not rather have that time to work on things instead of going to play a meaningless friendly against a team that usually not very good? I mean, France lost to Finland, to be fair. So.
We'll get to that. But, look, it's a fair point. They had the option of not doing it, the national team coaches. They said, we want to see our fringe players.
Yeah.
We want to see how they compete in these situations. And maybe we can use them in the Nations League games too. I don't really have an issue with it. And by the way, if we don't do this, how is Cristiano going to reach out and die?
Yeah, you're right. Exactly.
We're driven by the search for better.
But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, Jules, it's our prerogative with the benefit of hindsight of going back and saying, what could they have done differently? Yeah. Because you're seeing the injuries. I mean, the latest one within a Liverpool sphere, and it's rendered more serious by the fact that obviously Van Dijk and Fabinho are already out.
Yeah.
Joe Gomez going down. We don't know the details. Ansu Fati's gone down for Barcelona.
Joshua Kimmich.
Yeah, and it's hard to tell which ones are soft muscle injuries, which ones are down to overwork, what's this, what's that.
Yeah,
I'm not a doctor.
The fact is that they're all badly injured.
Precisely. So what are some of the... Let's go back in time and let's say, what could we have done differently? The five subs you disagree with.
Yeah.
But, I think we've been through. Obviously, yes. Most leagues have done that, which is, I think, should help a little bit in that regard. I'm wondering if, I mean, it goes without saying, scrapping the League Cup like they did in France and did not do in England,
yeah,
seems like an obvious one to me. Scrapping the FA Cup, the National Cup, that would have been more difficult.
Yeah, definitely. More because it involves the really grassroots clubs in every, and for them it's a dream, and for them they don't have the same issues and consequences to professional clubs, so it would have been unfair on them.
Precisely. And so I'll take a pass on that. But I'm wondering, if, for example, these two international breaks, and look, it's very difficult because we don't know where the pandemic was going to go and where it was going to take us.
Yeah.
You know, there were people in January people in the middle of the summer. I spoke to at UEFA and at the Premier League, who were saying, well, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. Well, we're pretty confident that by January, everything will be back to normal. We'll have full stadiums,
yes,
and whatever.
Yes, it looked,
right,
under control.
That's what they were saying.
In August.
What if you had in January said, okay, let's put January aside, let's play all the internationals in January. So eliminate those two international breaks in October and November, and everybody around the world, you travel to some place, maybe a warm weather place, and you play all the internationals then for a month. Might that have been a better,
yeah,
solution?
I think so. I mean, I think so. We heard Toni Kroos, I think on Monday or the weekend, saying, you know, FIFA and UEFA treating the players like puppets. I don't think at any time they listened to what the players maybe had to say or the way they were feeling. And I know that's the way it is, usually. But maybe they
okay, I'll put my FIFA and UEFA hat on,
yeah,
and I will say, thank you, Mr. Kroos. I agree with you. However, it's about money.
Yeah.
Okay?
No, but
so
Toni Kroos,
if you
knows
want
that.
Us... No, but what I'm saying is, and this is, again, a lost opportunity, right? But if the players' union, for example, the different countries, or the players themselves, even the rich players, have come out and said, this is being driven by the fact that the rich clubs need to have this revenue in. You know what? We want to play less games this year because of health, because of safety and whatever.
Yeah.
We realize you want us to play a lot of games because you need to pay our high salaries, which we earned. We will voluntarily take a cut of this much, but we want to play less games.
Yeah.
Can we have a negotiation here?
Yeah, but for that you need to sit down for the negotiation. I don't think they ever sat down with any players, right?
No, nobody.
Okay,
no, all you had was individual clubs going around and saying, "Uh-oh, we're going to have cash flow problems. Please take a voluntary pay cut, or a voluntary pay deferral."
Yeah.
Or in the case of Arsenal, send your manager around to make everybody take a pay cut.
I love managers have done that.
But you know.
Okay, Nations League, for example. Take Nations League. It's a new product, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a new competition.
Well, it's new. It's second edition, but
yeah. So it's new. Could you have scrapped it? Could you have maybe played, instead of playing home and away for each country? So that's, you know, there's four in your group. You just play two home,
you could
two
have.
Away.
You could have.
One away.
But you could have. If you do that, then you have sponsors and broadcasters going back and saying, well, I paid for this many games. You're not delivering them. So now what are we going to do? Now you're going to give me some money back. But my thing with the internationals is that money goes to the FAs. That money goes to the FAs. Not all FAs are rich. Many FAs are anything but rich.
Yeah.
You know, those are nonprofits. You know, that money's not going to an entrepreneur who owns a football club. And so for me, I treat that a little differently. But I think the solution of warm weather to play everything in January,
yeah, could work.
You know, that could work.
What drives me mad is when I hear that Gareth Southgate this week saying, oh, we need to sit down and we need to talk about this. It's too late. It's too late, my friend. Yeah. You can't do anything now. The whole season has been set up, built. You've got a fixture between now and the Euros in the summer. And that's it. What do you mean we need to sit down? You should have thought about that 2 months ago.
I think there's going to be an inflection point. We watched Liverpool and Manchester City on Sunday. Now, those are two of the very best teams in the world. Play some of the most entertaining football in the world, spectacle. And we saw what happened in that last half hour. As good as the first hour was, the last half hour was really poor.
Yeah, working football. No, I'm kidding.
I'm not going to make an excuse for people, but at some point, we've created this system which is so absurd, where from not just a player's health perspective, but a quality of the product perspective, where we're forcing people to play a bazillion games. And this is even before the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
Because they play so many games, the managers have a lot less time to coach.
Yeah.
They had no preseason this year, right? So they can't go and teach. And it seems weird to me that, you know, we're playing Klopp and Pep 10 million, 12 million, 15 million a year, right? So they can go and they can teach their philosophy of football, their style of football, but then they don't have any time to teach it to their players, right?
That's true.
Because look, we all know, we've been around footballers, right? A typical week, right? You play Saturday, Sunday you either have a warm down or it's off, right? Monday you go in and you have a walkthrough for your Champions League game on Tuesday, right? Wednesday you come back, you have a warm down. Thursday is the one day a week that you can actually do some training because Friday you're prepping for the next game. Now, how are you supposed to go and teach and work and do the job that you are highly paid for?
Yeah, you're right. And you know, it's funny because I interviewed Timo Werner the other day before the Rennes game in the Champions League. And we were talking about Edouard Mendy and joking. And I said, oh, by the way, he's so good. Can you even score a training against him? And he goes, we don't do shooting drills. We can't. We don't have, this is not what we do. All our sessions are recovering, preparing, recovering, preparing. And I was like, wow. So even that part of the game, even Frank Lampard can't really do shooting drills with his strikers because there's no time for that. And I just think this is crazy because you still ask for the same level of performances. Right. We all, I think, quite demanding in what we want to see, you know. And then you can't have it because they don't have the time to prepare to work on things. This, yesterday on the show, on the FC show, Stuart Robson made a really good point about Liverpool high line. Defensive high line saying, you know, to play such a high line, you need to work really hard every day with that back four so they understand each other so well, almost like can play with their eyes closed and can step up when needed or drop when needed. But if they're either all injured or you play every 3 days, you can't have time to work on that.
No, and you can imagine how that's even magnified for the national teams, right?
Oh, yeah, even worse.
You know, where it looks like these guys just met. It's harder to explain why Varane and Ramos have been so bad for Real Madrid, where they've had a lot of practice. But
many years together.
So I think at some point, this is going to hurt the product. And I've said this before. And for me, I think top flights should go down to 16 teams, 18 at a push, enough of the League Cup, this kind of nonsense. The problem is, though, when you take away official fixtures, and by the way, this whole argument's going to come up when they settle the calendar after 2024, when the national match calendar, you know, it's a free-for-all. These are the negotiations that they're having right now, because in the next 6 to 12 months, they're going to have to sort this out. But whenever you reduce the number of fixtures, then in normal times, non-pandemic times, the club says, ooh, let's go on tour. Let's go and play a friendly here. Let's go do that.
But the Clubs World Cup, and the new format.
Right.
With 24 clubs. This could be, Disney's not going to help.
No, I don't have a problem with that, personally, because I think I want to see elite clubs play each other. And in that situation, they would have proper preparation. It's after the season. They would have a build-up to it. They get time off and whatever. I have less of an issue with
but
that.
But it's more games for players, Gab, though. And for always is. For the same and players. The top players yeah. who already have so many games with the national team.
And that's why I'm wondering, and I remember floating this to the people at FIFPro, and I know that there'd be little details to figure out. But you know how airline pilots, for example, you know, they can't fly a plane unless they get X amount of hours yeah. in between, right? What if you implemented a rule like this? And you'd have to get together with doctors and sports scientists and whatever. But maybe it's something that you can only play X amount of minutes in your previous 12 months, whether of matches, whether it's friendlies, whether it's internationals, whatever, yeah. right? And you'd figure out some sort of way to allocate it so that you know when you start getting close to that limit, if I'm your club manager, I say, oh, look, I can't play him. I look back to see what he did a year ago. Okay, he played 90 minutes there. Okay, so I keep him out this week and then I regain those minutes or whatever. Something like that. I think would help and maybe would be necessary just from a player safety, a player safeguarding perspective. And I think it would be in the economic interest of people as well. Look, you and I we're very sick people, right? We've got this disease called football, right?
Yeah,
we will watch anything, you especially.
Yeah,
right?
you too.
But we watch because it's the brands, right?
Yeah.
What we saw in that last half hour, Liverpool-Man City, there was the Liverpool brand against the Man City brand, and so we watched it. But that's not what Liverpool looks like, and that's not what Manchester City looks like. And at some point, I think it's going to end up hurting the product if they don't figure something out.
To the detriment, for sure.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, hey, enough of a bummer now. Let's go for some quick hits instead and cheer us all up.
Let's go, Gav.
And on that note, now they may be world champions, but
you're
France
so bad
lost at home to Finland.
So bad.
But France lost at home to Finland, 2-0. Jules, is this a big deal? And surely it was all Paul Pogba's fault, right? It's always his fault.
Yeah, it's always his fault. I was going to make a joke and say, let's move on, I don't care. I've forgotten about the game already. If we just... For the listeners and the watchers who are interested, it was a C team. There was a lot of new different players.
So Paul Pogba was in the C team?
No, but apart from Pogba and Giroud, I guess the only two starters that usually would start. The rest, he was doing a Mandanda in goal and then Zonzi in midfield and Moussa Sissoko, who let's hope we
respect,
don't see again.
Respect,
Moussa Sissoko.
Sissoko
was dreadful. Not only he gave away the first goal, but he was dreadful. So was Nzonzi. But listen, it was a bad game. They didn't play well at all. Finland were well organized. They were aggressive. They played well. They took
Enough
chance
analysis.
And a half. No, but it's true. The only good thing about France is Marcus Thuram making his debut 12
and
years
goal.
And hitting the bar. That's what he did. And then he missed a big chance, but he hit the bar as well. 12 years after his dad's last cap. 142nd cap. By the way, Steve Mandanda was playing for France when Lilian Thuram played his last game and was playing for France when Marcus Thuram played his first game, which I think is really cool. And he was the only bright stuff. The rest was all bad, throw away, move on to the Portugal game on Saturday.
You know what would have been much more impressive? Eider Gudjonsson. He made his debut
know,
for Iceland and he played with his dad.
I know, but
now that's cool. It's much
Iceland.
Cooler than 12 years apart.
It's Iceland. Right. No, but it's still
cool.
Stop
dissing Iceland.
No, but it's still cool that you have a player who play both with father and son. It's, you know, it's really cool. It doesn't happen all the time. Portugal beat Andorra 7-0 and Cristiano Ronaldo scores and takes one step closer to Ali Daei's record. International goal scoring records for men's football. He's got 102, Ali Daei's got 109. he's going to happen, right? But by the way, can he catch Christine Sinclair, who's on 186 for the women goal scoring records?
I see no reason if Portugal keeps playing Andorra every month, then he could probably break Christine Sinclair's record by the time he's, what, 45? Got it. Yeah. Tremendous achievement, Christine Sinclair, who, by the way, I don't even think she's retired yet. So no, she could add a few more.
She's just got 296 caps.
But, Cristiano played one half. I think he was probably a bit annoyed.
He was well crossed.
Time, but load manager. Don't worry, Cristiano, you'll get your goals. Plenty of excitement generated in the past 48 hours by talk of a Neymar for Ronaldo swap. Leonardo saying he'd welcome Cristiano. Maybe he was misquoted, taken out of context. I don't know. Jules, what's the story? Put this in order for us.
Yeah, and I wrote for the website about Neymar. He wants to stay in Paris. PSG want to keep him. They're talking about an extension. And
so why the Ronaldo for Neymar swap?
I don't know where that came from.
And Ronaldo was also going. He was also linked to Manchester United,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and maybe even back to Real Madrid. I don't know. The Neymar-Ronaldo swap is not going to happen. This is pretty clear. What Leonardo said about Ronaldo, which I guess is interesting, he said, his point was, you don't know what happens in football. Anything can happen. He said, maybe tomorrow, Cristiano will wake up and say, you know what, I want to move on from Juventus. I want to go and play for another club. How many clubs can afford him right now? It's a very small circle of clubs.
Maybe he can buy Paris Saint-Germain from the Qataris and then take Leonardo's job.
Yeah, maybe.
Just to lift the lid on this, it's all about contracts. Cristiano's contract at Juve expires in June 2022.
Exactly.
So obviously this is when you start laying the seeds.
Yeah,
happen.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Napoli's appeal against the Italian FA's decision to dock them a point and having them losing that game 3-0 at Juventus last month was rejected. Gab, you expected this, and is it a big deal?
I thought the extra point penalty was a bit unnecessary.
Yeah.
You docked them the point because they didn't show up. The argument is that they never had any intention of going. Or you'll recall the local health authority had initially said that they needed to stay, but then they had a full investigation in this. It's complicated. Looking at the evidence, you really want to sift through it, find it online, you can kind of see why Napoli's appeal was rejected.
Yeah.
It's a complicated story. Let's not waste time on it. Let's talk about Spain and Holland instead. They drew 1-1 in their friendly. Jules, I know you want to show love to Frank de Boer.
He's the worst coach. I was going to say worst coach. I mean, he's worst coach in Crystal Palace history. He's the worst coach maybe in Inter Milan history, and you've had some bad ones.
We had Hodgson's second spell or third spell. Yeah.
And now he's the worst coach in the Netherlands history because no one has ever started as badly as he has with the national team.
But he did wonders at Atlanta United in MLS.
Did he?
No.
No, exactly. He might even be Atalanta. Atalanta's. He might even be Atlanta's worst coach ever. For all I know, I don't know. He's just a bad coach. I don't even know what we're wondering if he's any good or he's just bad.
Stop picking on him.
I'm not picking on him. Koeman had put something in place, whether you like him or not. They were playing much better. They were doing much better. The guy arrives, throws everything away. And now they're back to where they were, back to square one, where they were 2 years ago or 4 years ago. It's ridiculous. I don't get it. And they were lucky to get a draw, by the way, against Spain. In that game, Sergio Ramos won his 176th cap, which is equaling Gigi Buffon for the most European player with as many caps. So new UEFA players has more. Now the record, the all-time men's record, is Ahmed Hassan of Egypt, who has 184. He's going to break that as well, right?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much a dead certainty that Ramos is going to break it. But I'll tell you what, Sergio, and it's a phenomenal achievement.
It's incredible.
Look over your shoulder, because who's coming behind you who's got maybe, I think he's got like 167, 169, I don't know, something like that. It's Cristiano Ronaldo. So I could see Cristiano Ronaldo saying, I will retire from international football as number one in men's and number one in appearances, goals. Number one in goals scored.
Imagine.
Belgium beat Switzerland 2-1. Jules, two goals for Michy Batshuayi, a.k.a. the Batsman. I love it when people give themselves their own nicknames. That is so cool. I love my Michy. He's good performance, yeah.
So Belgium, horrible first half by Belgium, who, in
fairness, went a goal down.
They went a goal down because Sebastian Borna, who only was the second cap, made a mess of it. There was loads of changes that Roberto Martinez did. Even some players who I don't think were really playing in the best position. But anyway.
Talk about the batsman.
Yeah, the batsman. 20 goals in 32 caps now. He's lethal. He's lethal with Belgium. Again, whether you like him or not.
A lot of the time.
No, because, Romelu Lukaku is usually the starter. But really good second half, much better. I mean, when Tielemans comes on and plays like that, it's so much easier for Belgium. I don't think Switzerland were that bad at all in the second half. I just think Belgium upped their game massively, and Batshuayi was really clinical in the two chances that he had, two really good goals. Good on them for the game against England at the weekend.
Hop Schwitz.
Italy beat Estonia 4-0. Gab, they played a bunch of kids and fringe players, and even Roberto Mancini wasn't there. He was at home in self-isolation.
Yeah, the poor guy tested positive. So we had, well, Kiko Ivani was technically the manager, but Mancini's old pal and mine, Gianluca Vialli, on the sidelines. He had this big sort of...
It's awesome
seeing him. I did a text exchange with him after the game. He had this... I made fun of him because he had this big sort of Sam Allardyce-style earpiece.
Yeah.
Mancini was at home watching on TV, giving instructions and relaying.
Can you imagine?
No, it was nice to see a bunch of kids out there. Pessina, you know, guys like Orsolini, like Vincenzo Grifo.
Grifo, the former pride of
Hoffenheim. Although he's now at Freiburg, I believe.
All good.
You know, helps the FIFA rankings. Germany beat the Czech Republic 1-0 as Jogi Löw also rested a bunch of regulars, mostly Bayern players, funnily enough. Jules, did you learn anything?
Not really, Gab. So debut for Philipp Max, for a left wing back, for Baku, a right wing back. There was a goal for Lukas Waldschmidt, who... It's done well for Benfica, so it's good, I guess, for him to score on international duty. It's just, I still think there's so much work to be done in transition. Even defensively, I thought they conceded far too many chances.
He played the 3-4-3 again, so obviously it's something he wants to continue doing. Clearly, that's his thing.
That's his thing right now.
Very cutting edge.
Does he have the players for that, though? You know?
A reminder of Arteta's 3-4-3. Except he's got no Kieran Tierney. Instead of Kieran Tierney, he's got Antonio Rudiger.
Yeah, but he's got Rudiger, Koch and Jonathan Tah playing at the back. I mean, again, you know, there was loads of... This is the B team or the C team even. So I just don't... I mean, it's good that they won eventually after all those draws.
It's not good. It's good if you're German. It's good for them. That's good if you're
German. And at least they didn't concede. But again, I still think there's a lot of work to be done there. More Italy, more COVID. Gab, do we know anything more about the Lazio inquiry?
No, it's still ongoing, and there's two.
They lied basically, right? They went to a lab that they knew everybody would be negative.
Yeah, they went to a lab rather than being tested locally in Rome.
Yeah.
There's a lab called SynLab, which is also accredited with UEFA, and which is the lab that Roma use for their tests. They decided to go for a lab in Avellino, which is owned by a guy named Taccone, who's a friend of
Lotito's. All a coincidence, right?
Yes. Yeah. Apparently this lab, there's some confusion. Maybe they test for some markers, but they don't test for other markers, which Lazio's team doctor doesn't consider relevant. I don't know. He was supposed to testify. He missed one. He's supposed to testify again today. He postponed his earlier testimony because he said he felt unwell.
Of course.
Look, needless to say, this is players' health. And I don't know that Lazio necessarily did anything untoward in terms of knowing that they were going to receive a different treatment. But I think equally, if you're the team doctor, you have a responsibility to immediately ask yourself, wait a minute, why am I getting two different sets of results here? There's also a strong possibility, and I think this is going to be lots of defense, and there is some merit to it, saying like, well, we're going by what the swabs tell us. You can't accuse us of breaking quarantine if we're following the swabs. But I don't know. Hopefully you shed some light for it. And hopefully the message to everybody is, let's not screw around with this stuff. Let's have one rule for everybody.
Yeah. Talking about COVID, did you see the Vida incident with Croatia against Turkey? That he started the game, played the first half. At halftime, they found out that he tested positive. How is that even possible?
Well,
because how can you endanger the health of all the other players by doing that?
I was going to put that in quick hits, and then I completely forgot. So I'm glad that you brought it up.
That's what I'm here for.
This is crazy. It's Croatia-Turkey. It finishes 3-3. He only gets his result at halftime. He'd already been substituted. He was due to be substituted at halftime anyway. I don't understand how this is possible. Hopefully it'll be an inquiry. I would have thought you would take the swab before the game.
And certainly you can't play if you don't have the results beforehand.
I honestly, this is another situation where you throw the book at him. By the way, for those who don't know who Domagoj Vida is, because you don't follow the Ukrainian league, or is it Ukraine or Russia?
Yeah.
You'll remember him from the World Cup, because he was a tall, very blonde, Viking-looking dude next to Lovren, who had the World Cup of his life. But not his fault, I suppose. But
no, but
I seriously have rules, have protocols, follow the protocols.
Yeah.
Let's turn to an ugly story in the Premier League or in England. Greg Clark, who is the chairman of the Football Association, he submitted his resignation yesterday. Now, this was just hours, if that, after he was giving testimony before a parliamentary committee into issues of diversity and whatnot in England. And he used a bunch of terms which simply aren't unacceptable if you're in charge of a governing body, and he said a bunch of things which are simply unacceptable if you're in charge of a governing body, right?
Completely. I mean, I was gobsmacked by so much stupidity and ignorance coming from someone. I mean, it should be the same for everyone, but especially someone.
He's a representative. Such a high profile. He's in the public eye.
Exactly. A few days
ago, he's got
a
team of communications consultants around him saying, like, this is the terminology that we use. It's not acceptable to call a person of color, to call them colored. There is a difference to it.
You can't do that, man. I mean, I don't understand how he even thought it was possible. He said that gay people, they're gay because it's a lifestyle choice. What? Hang on, what? A lifestyle choice? I mean, and there was even more than that. I mean, it's just surreal, I think.
He suggested that, because he was at one of the big issues in England to do with diversity, is that players of Afro-Caribbean descent are generally overrepresented in professional football relative to the population, and players of South Asian descent are underrepresented. And he said that, well, but if you go to the IT department at the FA, you'll find that people of South Asian descent are overrepresented.
It's crazy. But in 2017, if you remember, in front of Parliament or in front of one of the committees, he said, but racism in football is all fluff.
Yeah,
and had to like quickly try back. Even then, I would have sacked him. I would get rid of him anyway.
I mean, it's a complicated thing because you have the FA as an organization, and then you have sort of the FA, the part of the FA which includes all the regional heads who appoint the chairman.
Yeah,
the FA as an organization has put effort in to improve diversity. I don't think that's undeniable.
No, that's for sure. But there's still a long way to go. Clearly,
no. But you can't have a guy at the top speaking that way. And then the explanations he gives make no sense. He said, well, I use the term colored because I worked in the U.S. for many years. Yeah, it was like back in the 1980s. And back then, the term people of color was the preferred term. I'm like, yes, people of color is one thing. Colored is another one. Yeah. I mean, I think what I find most shocking is, like, it's not for me. I'm a white male. I say I'm a white heterosexual male. It's not for me to be offended by this, right? But you are the chairman of an FA, which is for everybody. What I find shocking isn't that you would stumble over your words, because that can happen. It's that you're so blasé and so ignorant about what the norms are. There are norms out there for a reason. You have communications consultants out there for a reason. It's a messaging thing that you send out to people around you. And when you misspeak like this, you're sending the message,
completely,
I don't really care about this, and I don't listen to my comms people.
And Tyrone Mings, who spoke not long after in his press conference with England, I thought was so good. And the way he explained what he meant to him, how he saw it from his own eyes. And it was just damning for Greg Clark.
No, and predictably, he's also resigned his position as UEFA's representative on the FIFA Council, which means, by the way, that 150,000 euro a year salary for that, it's now up for grabs. But again, little side thing on this, because this is another one of those weird vestiges of colonialism. Because what they like to call the home nations here in the United Kingdom, right?
Yeah.
England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland, which, by the way, is known as the Football Association, isn't the FA Football Association of Northern Ireland. No, it's the Irish Football Association.
Yeah.
They get an automatic spot on the FIFA Council. They get an automatic vice presidency. It's just like Europe gets like a bonus spot, and it has to be one of those four nations, and they'd have it on a rotational basis. So now they'll figure out some Welsh guy, some Irish guy, some Scot will probably
privileges.
Yeah, it's. I mean, honestly, this is another thing. Like the representation on IFAB that they really should get rid of. I know there's more important things to be done, but this is pretty ridiculous. There, set my piece.
No, yeah. Argentina played Paraguay in the CONMEBOL qualifiers, Gav. But let's talk about Lautaro Martinez and Paulo Dybala, both after new deals.
Yeah, and it's just interesting because they're two very different situations. If we were to rewind the clock back 6 months, right, yeah, we would have Lautaro supposedly on his way to Barcelona for, you know, they were going to pay the $100 million release clause, and Paulo Dybala having a monster season with Juve and negotiating a new contract. He was offered supposedly €10 million a year net, which back of the envelope calculation is something like £350,000 a week, if that's how you like to keep score, gross. He turned it down. He turned it down in hopes for a better deal, and obviously he was instrumental to Juve winning the title. Now he's on the bench. He's not playing. When he does play, he plays badly, like when he gives the ball away against Lazio on the dying minutes. I'm sure if you could go back in time, he would gladly have taken that deal. As for Lautaro, you know, Inter now want to lock him up to a new contract, get rid of the release clause. Obviously, it's not going to be Barcelona who sign him unless they manage to trick Inter into swapping him for Griezmann or something. So I think Lautaro is in the stronger position.
If you're Inter, you want to keep Lautaro, right? If you're Lautaro, you want to stay there, or you want to get some. And same for Juventus and Dybala.
I think so. I think Dybala. The difficulty for Dybala is who's going to take him now, and what kind of money is he going to get? Because obviously he's not playing, his value goes down. You know, he's 26, 27 now, so he's not like super young. Lautaro's younger. I think it makes sense for Inter to make a longer term commitment. Yeah. And I think they also have some leverage because, again, in the current climate, not that many clubs have money.
True.
Now looks like Memphis Depay is sticking around at Lyon. Good move, Jules?
Well, I don't think it's his choice. Jean-Michel Aulas, the Lyon president and owner, came on French radio the other day saying, Memphis will stay with us until the end of the season, which means that he will be off contract then, run out his contract in Lyon. I think Memphis, who really wanted to go to Barcelona in the summer, was really close to joining them. I think he still had in the back of his head probably going in January. I don't think that will happen now. He will stay and then go wherever he wants for free at the end of the season. I just think it's...
So if Barcelona show up in January and they say, hey, Jean-Michel.
Yeah, he's 20 million.
Mon chéri. Yeah, here's 20 million,
$15 million. He will take it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of...
But he was in his role to say, oh yeah, he's going to stay. And he hasn't even... He's had some really good games, Memphis, some other more average, but he's still very important to them. So I can see why Olas ideally would want to keep him the whole season and try to finish top three to go into the Champions League next season. It's easier with Memphis than without. But yeah, you're right. Let's see in January what comes for him. Gab, on the website, we're running a poll where you can vote and cast your vote for the GOATs in a few countries. So pick who's the best player in Argentina history, Brazil history, France, Italy, etc., etc. Which ones did you find the toughest to select?
Well, this is an interesting one because I think you have, from most countries, you have three or four options.
Three or four, yeah.
But for some countries, like, you know, I was part of the committee that wasn't my final say that selected like, the options for Italy. And I think in the end, I went with Meazza, who won two World Cups for Italy and one of the all-time top scorers in Serie A, played a million years for Inter, the stadium, San Siro's name for him.
Of course, yeah.
And then the other three were modern era players. I went with Roberto Baggio, Franco Baresi, and Paolo Maldini. But
you could have had 10, right?
In Italy, yeah, there isn't an obvious. It's not like Argentina, where you've got three guys: Maradona, Messi, and Di Stefano, who are head and shoulders above everybody. Oh, really? You know, Maradona and Messi, and then Di Stefano a little lower, just because of the timing. In England, so how do you even begin to decide who it is? You know, I think our selections. I think were Charlton, Bobby Moore, Jimmy Greaves. You know, reasonable ones, but. But who knows? And I think that's what makes it so interesting. I mean, some countries have individuals and others don't.
Yeah, that's right.
So for France, I think you had Raymond Coppa, Michel Platini, well, obviously Zinedine Zidane, and Camavinga, right? No, not yet.
Mbappé. No, not yet. I had Thierry Henry as my fourth one. But again, you know, the difference...
Was that just to make up the numbers, or were you really going to argue that Thierry Henry belongs ahead?
No, he's the highest scorer. You know, I think he deserves to be in the conversation. I think for me, the first three that you mentioned are clear ahead of everybody else. They've been the superstar in their own era. Copa, obviously, end of the 50s, 60s, both for club and country. Platini, obviously, in the 80s.
Who'd you vote for?
I think it's a tough one between Platini and Zidane. You know, I can see why people like Zidane a lot, and I just think Michel Platini was just something else. And I think I would go for Platini, narrowly beating Zinedine.
Interesting one, yeah. I went the same way as well. But, you know, again, those are good selections to have.
Who would you go for Italy?
I thought you were asking who's going to go for France. But, you know, for Italy, I think in the end I chose Meazza simply because of the weight of history. Because, look, two World Cups, you can't really ignore. There's not many people who've won two World Cups who... but it is an interesting conversation. Yeah. I think Brazil, that was another one where, you know, you had Pelé, you had Garrincha, and you had the original Ronaldo. By the way, I'm just calling him the original Ronaldo to troll. There's two idiots on Twitter who keep complaining when I refer to the original. Original Ronaldo is not a slight on Cristiano Ronaldo. Original Ronaldo means the one who came first. It doesn't mean Cristiano Ronaldo is a fraud. He's anything but a fraud.
Yeah.
He's one of the greatest players of all time. There was another one, too. Like for Portugal, you assume Cristiano's going to win. I'm sure he's going to win the popular poll. But he's up against Eusebio, who is, you know, a serious player.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
They tacked Luis Figo on there, who, with all the love in the world for Luis Figo, he's not in a conversation with Cristiano and Eusebio. Arsenal fans, rejoice! Gunnersaurus is back! Should we be saying, Danke schön, Mesut?
No, you shouldn't. Why? That's got nothing to do with Mesut.
Because Mesut went on Twitter and he explained that he's saving Gunnersaurus.
Yeah, but he's not. He didn't save. And by the way, Gunnersaurus didn't go anywhere, okay? He was never gone. He was always there. It's just that there was nothing for him to do.
I didn't see him at games. He wasn't there cheering up the players.
Dude, there's no fans in the stands. He's not
the players
there for the
are
players.
There.
I know, but he's not there for the players. He's there for the fans mostly. So he's back now. Everybody can chill. I never understood the fascination about it. But hey.
So what happened? Is it the same guy or did they find another guy?
It's not the same guy, but that's the only thing that has changed. It's the same dinosaur.
What happened? Why did the guy change?
Well, because he was, it was the time for him to change. That's it.
Okay. All right. If you say so.
Yeah.
By the way, I love the fact that they also outed the guy on Twitter, which I thought it was supposed to be a secret who he was, right?
Usually, yeah.
You would think so, right?
Yes.
But whatever.
But, you know. Right, let's end on a happy note. Diego Maradona is out of hospital and feeling better.
Yeah, I don't think there's much to say. I mean, look, I know some people have divided opinion, but obviously after what he's been through, I am so happy he's out. I hope he rests. I hope he relaxes, and I hope he takes care of himself. Right, Jules, that brings us to an end. We'll be back on
Monday.
Monday, that's right. We'll hopefully have some Nations League football to talk about, which I'm looking forward to. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjewels, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjewels now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjewels.